Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. It's that time of year again. I've been looking forward to it now for 12 months. John Jefferson, Dr. Bill Bass, the writing team of Jefferson Bass, you're back. There's a new book. Thank you for coming. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Both of us are glad to be here.
We're back and badder than ever.
and you've made it a little tradition, and I hope maybe a little good luck charm to make this the first stop on your promotional tour for the new book, The Bone Thief. Thank you.
It's all downhill from here. This is our favorite interview. This is always great.
You're very kind. Now, the book, The Bone Thief, is outstanding. I've had a chance to read it, and I have to be upfront and disclose that unlike previous interviews where I have just read the book and then you come in, I've actually read this one back in January because John Jefferson called my bluff, Dr. Bass. Now, I haven't had a chance to tell you this story, but one time in one of these interviews, you guys came in and I had a question about some little continuity thing in one of the books. And John's like, oh, no, I'm embarrassed. You caught me. And it really wasn't that big of a deal. But, you know, it's been a running gag now on this show and in our relationship that John has called me the eagle eye. So last time I saw him, he says, oh, OK, eagle eye, you think you're so good. You think you're so smart. How'd you like to try and proofread the next one? So if there are any mistakes in The Bone Thief, it's on me.
Very clever of me, wasn't it?
You dog. So, all right, having gotten that out of the way, the book, The Bone Thief, it's about real life occurrences in our world set to fiction. Let's talk about grave robbery. Let's talk about people having their bones stolen from them. Dr. Bass, let's start with you. This has happened in real life. I mean, Alastair Cook, the famous British journalist, had his bones stolen.
That's right. And it's something that occurs a lot more frequently than many people think. Unfortunately, it's occurring today, I expect, somewhere in the world.
Well, let's start with why.
The why mainly is to make money, to sell body parts to biological supply houses that treat them and grind them up into what's called bone burger or things like this. Or
bone what?
Bone burger.
Burger.
Just like a hamburger. And they're used in orthopedic surgeries. For replacing bone, if you have lost bone, two things come to mind immediately. If you are have a class 3 malocclusion, class 1 malocclusion, where your lower jaw, your mandible, is way back from the mm-hmm. upper jaw, the maxilla, you can cut the bone, the mandible, and bring it forward and space that area with bone burger. You can put bone burger in there to build the jaw
and
out.
And it grows into
It grows into to bone. It adapts itself.
All right. So, John Jefferson, you must have heard about these cases, and your eyes must, as a writer, probably lit up and said, there's drama. There's excitement.
Oh, yeah. And the idea that, there are these people out there stealing bones from bodies, you know, people who have connections with crematories or funeral homes that have access to body parts and bones. I mean, the idea of pairing that with the body farm and somebody lusting after the body parts and bones at the body farm was a really fun connection to make fictionally.
Yes, and we're talking about someone who is corrupt. One of the characters is corrupt and wants a source of material, is looking for a way they can get biological matter without it being traced back. I would think that a crematory would be more likely a place where your bones would be stolen from because the evidence then is burned up and disposed of. Yet, in real life and in the book, you have situations where people steal bones from bodies that then ultimately get buried, which, you know, can ultimately be discovered.
That's correct.
Why would a criminal be that dumb?
Well, they don't think they're going to be caught. Most people think that once you're buried, that's it, you're buried. But there are many, many reasons why people are exhumed later on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do probably 3 or 4 of these a year.
Yeah.
Where somebody's dug up and they want me to take a look and see what's there or what's happened.
I've made it very clear to my family, exhume me as many times as is necessary to prove whatever needs to be proven. Go ahead. Good. Dig me up.
Good for you, because we have a case here in town, a lawsuit in which they have so far legally refused to exhume the body. And the only way you're going to find the real truth is to dig that body up and look at it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then in the story and in the situations like, let's say, Alastair Cook's perhaps, and in real life, people get exhumed or the casket gets looked into. And what is it they find when you see someone who has been thieved, someone whose bones have been stolen? What is actually left?
Well, you will see that they either did not put something in to replace that. I think in Alistair Cook's case, they put in plastic pipe.
PVC, plumbing pipe.
PVC, yeah, put in plumbing pipe to make it look like he was all there.
Couldn't they have gone to the Halloween store and maybe at least bought a plastic skeleton or something? I mean, you'd think. PVC pipe?
It's easy to get. It's easy
to
buy.
And the other thing that I don't understand about Alistair Cook's case is he was like 90 plus. Sick.
Bone is bone. If he had some bad disease, it would be bad. This is one of the problems that they have is that somebody will have a disease and they don't do a very good job in some cases of processing this material so that they kill all the bacteria that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people who get bone transplants all of a sudden find out, hey, I've got some bad disease like HIV or something like that,
Okay. And that is also some actual science. Dr. Bill Bass provides the science in the Jefferson Bass books. John Jefferson provides, as I said last year, the derring do, the writing and such. Tell me again how the process works, John. You and Dr. Bass obviously communicate regularly, and you're looking for ideas from him, or you've got the story idea and you need the science to back it up. What's the ebb and flow of information there?
Ebb and flow is a good phrase. We bounce ideas back and forth. In each book, we try to include some new principle or theory or technology, something new about forensic anthropology. In this book, there's a lot about transplant surgery, prostheses, mm-hmm. Artificial limbs, because we have a character who's lost his hands in the previous book to a terrible radiation accident. So we talk about how do we, what do we do with this character that we left hanging last time? We talk about what new ideas can we bring in
so
people learn something.
I do like the soap opera aspect of the book in that there are continuing storylines.
Yeah.
There's things now, and this is book number 5?
This is number 5.
Number 5.
There's things that this book refers to that happened back in books 1, 2, 3, 4, all of them. It is a series, and I don't let my wife or anybody else read them out of order. I insist that they start at the beginning and work their way through.
there are characters from book 1 that are in book 5.
I like that.
Yes.
We've
kept many of the characters, not all
but,
of them.
And then we've lost, we've lost some along the way.
But also that, maybe this is, I don't know how unique it is to Knoxville versus, a big city like New York, but you do encounter the same people in different contexts throughout our professional lives. It happened to me just yesterday. I was at a meeting and I knew this lady from somewhere and she was in a completely different capacity, but it was the same lady that I had met
before,
5 years ago when she was working for architects. John, in this book, you have hit on in chapter 1, page 1, line 1, one of my favorite topics. And I'll admit that I'm a fan of the TV news anchor, especially the attractive TV news anchor.
You are not unique among television viewers, Frank.
Yes. All right. Tell me about the research that you went into when you created a character based on a local TV anchor, a fictional character who in the story is a local TV anchor.
That character who is, I don't think I'm giving away too much to say that character, is not a living character.
Yes, the character's already dead when the book starts.
Right. She's a television news anchor who has died suddenly, but she had previously arranged to donate her body to the body farm.
Mm-hmm.
And, and so she is, it's interesting, she is on camera there. Dr. Brockton is taking photographs, time-lapse photographs, to document her decomposition at the body farm meticulously. And, the idea that was interesting there is that this, this woman in life, she is, what people know of her and see of her is this face, this attractive face that mm-hmm. delivers the news to them every night in this very pleasant way, and then suddenly this very different set of images of her is being gathered,
mm-hmm.
And it's, as far as research, Bill and I have been on television a lot, and I used
That's
to make television documentaries.
Uh-huh.
And I, in fact, out at the body farm, when I was doing these two National Geographic documentaries about the body farm, which is how Bill and I met, I, in fact, set up a time-lapse camera to take photographs of a body as it was decaying from the time it went on the ground until the time, you know, it had completely decomposed.
There's one fella that Dr. Bass uses in his slideshow, and Dr. Murray Marks also uses in a slideshow, that as the guy decomposes, he's a thin man, but the bloating takes place. And at one point in the slides, and it gets a laugh, unfortunately, I mean, but it's to break the tension, where during his decomposition, he goes from looking like a thin guy to looking like actor John Goodman, because he gets puffy in the face.
In the decay process, you go from fresh to what's called bloat. And this is where the bacteria in the body is expanding, and you do. You bloat up, and then you go to decay and into dry. So there is a sequence that all animals, birds, and fish follow in this decay process.
We're talking with Dr. Bill Bass, the man that Metropulse called arguably the most famous Knoxvillian, and the great writer John Jefferson. They did. The great writer John Jefferson, the Jefferson half of the Jefferson Bass team. You look a little embarrassed that I brought that up.
Yeah, I don't think.
I read the article. It's what it said.
Okay.
And I don't disagree with it.
We have lots of good fans.
Yes. Several things I want to ask about. Obviously, let me jump ahead a little bit. I want to make sure that I don't leave out your campaign to create a new anthropology center, a new anthropology building on the campus of the University of Tennessee, the William M. Bass III Forensic Anthropology Building. It's right now just a blueprint or even just an artist sketch. What is your hope and desire for this building that needs to be built over, I assume, right near the body farm?
It is. It's going to be on the body farm right behind the UT hospital. Fortunately, we have most of the money for it.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's the money's been there. It's just a comedy of errors. It's bureaucracy, I think, is what the problem is. But the picture you've seen of it is an architectural drawing, and the architect's already gone through the building. They're having troubles now with the thing is sitting on where it will be built.
Don't tell me it's an old Indian burial ground.
No, it's
okay.
I wish it were. I mean, we could get some. It's proposed to be sitting on a rock ledge, and we've got before the engineering people can bid on how much it's going to cost to build a building, they've got to find out how much rock there is and so forth. Is there a cave under it or something like that?
Well, I know that you've been doing some events. There was one last year aboard the Volunteer Princess. There was one recently at Roan State Community College. These are fundraisers for the building fund and to get the word out that this building needs to get done. And you've made it a mission to get it done soon.
Yes. We needed it 2 years ago.
I imagine it to be like a big kitchen where you cook the bones down to clean them up on the inside. What is it really going to be like?
Okay. The bodies come in and are left at the body farm. The research that goes on at the body farm is mainly master's thesis or doctoral dissertations. And then when that research is over or that body is not needed on studying the decay process anymore, then those bones are collected. In fact, we have a recovery party going on today, and they go out and recover the bones. Mm-hmm. And these bones, it depends on when you died and what the climate was.
What's the appropriate gift to bring to a recovery party?
That's just a joke.
But the appropriate attire is probably a Tyvek biohazard suit.
That's right. Tyvek biohazard suit. There are still a lot of dehydrated or leathery skin on the bones that have just simply dried out. And you've got to remove that, and you can remove it a number of ways. You try not to use a knife or something like that because you don't want to cut the bones, because who's ever is going to come along and do research on the bones later on.
Right.
Suspect these things. And so essentially what happens, we have a large steam jacketed kettle. It's what you use in the restaurant industry for cooking potatoes and big vats. We put water in there and put the bones in, and you don't boil it. You'll boil the ends off the bones if you do that.
Just simmer.
You simmer it. You get it to simmer.
Don't I recall you getting in trouble for doing some of this at your own house?
Oh, I bought my first wife 2 stoves. Of course, I was a graduate student, didn't have anywhere to do this, so I did it at home. But boy, I watch pot never boils. But if you you know, go to the bathroom while you're waiting, and you come back, it's boiled over on the stove, and every time the stove gets hot, it smells like decaying body. Looks like I would have learned, but I didn't.
Dr. Bill Bass, John Jefferson, authors of The Bone Thief, the new Jefferson Bass mystery novel, exciting, you know, thriller and stuff. There was an incident within the past year, maybe about a year ago, where somebody got onto the body farm and stole some skulls.
That's true, unfortunately.
I mean, that's bad.
They stole six, of which we have recovered two. Two of the six.
Okay.
There is a person of interest.
Yeah.
But the police have not been able to get enough information to...
I'm a fan of the body farm. I'm not going to go breaking in and stealing skulls. I mean, is this someone who is overly enthusiastic, or is there more nefarious motives, do you think?
Well, it's a situation in which they're stealing bones and selling them.
Oh, and this ties right in with the book, The Bone Thief.
That's right. Mm-hmm. In this case, they're not selling them to biological supply houses. They're selling them to people in the drug cult that want a skull or something like that.
Have I ever told you about there was an actor named Del Close, and he founded an improv group in Chicago. And he made it clear that his wishes were to have his skull used in Hamlet productions. That was his long wish. And for years, people were rumored that he received his wish. I got a chance to talk to his widow and found out that, no, it didn't work out because they didn't know how to get the skull out of him before he was cremated. Now, let's suppose someone else wanted to be the skull in Hamlet. Could they... possibly, what would they have to do to come to the body farm and say, okay, you know, skeletonize me and give my skull to the, you know, the Clarence Brown Theater?
That could be done.
Yeah?
Yeah, that could be done.
Oh.
We have one of the donors, it's been a few years ago now, and she may have died. I don't keep up with those records anymore, but she wanted her skeleton processed, her body processed to a skeleton where... we would send the skeleton to a college in Kentucky where she went to school.
Okay. And so she would become a scientific classroom tool.
We do not rearticulate the bones.
Which means
putting them back in anatomical order. Well, the hardware for that is fairly expensive, and it takes a lot of time. And we just don't do that. But we agreed to do this. We would send her skeleton in a box. And if they want to put it back together, they can do that.
We're talking again with the authors of The Bone Thief. John, let me ask you, I'm trying to get through all these topics because I know we only have a limited time. I always love the travelogue aspect of the Jefferson Bass books because I can read the book and I can see myself exactly where the characters are. Granted, of course, we all live here in East Tennessee where the stories are set. I enjoyed the trip to Asheville, North Carolina in this book and the Grove Park Inn specifically.
And I'm sure the Grove Park Inn is going to be really excited when they read about this seminar involving severed arms that's set in one of their ballrooms.
So they didn't know.
They did not know.
Not yet anyway.
Right.
So they'll find out on March 23rd when the book comes out.
I'm sure we'll be getting a complimentary gift stay from the Grove Park. One of the things that is fun to write about in writing the books is East Tennessee because it's just such a gorgeous, gorgeous area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and to write about driving through the mountains to Asheville or to be able to write about, you know, the fog spooling down the river, you know, past UT Hospital or the stadium. I mean, those, you know, it's really a gift to get to spend that time, you know, writing about those things that are so gorgeous here that, you know, that we kind of take for granted. I mean, I certainly take them for granted. But then when I write about them, you know, I re-experience and remember to appreciate how beautiful it is here.
Is this stuff that's already in your memory bank and you're drawing upon? Or are you actively driving around thinking, oh, I could write about that place? Or what's the process?
It's some of both. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm just driving along Neyland Drive at night, you know, and seeing the reflections of the lights in the water and just how they kind of smear and shimmer. And, you know, it's just so lovely. I think, oh, you know, to write about Knoxville and do Knoxville any kind of justice, mm-hmm. I have to put that in somewhere. And so, you know, there is sort of a little, you know, index card file in my head of things that are, you know, that really need to go into a scene somewhere. But then sometimes it is, you know, literally driving around thinking, okay, you know, there's a scene in one book where I needed to it was in The Devil's Bones, where I needed a place where a guy burns his wife in a car.
Right.
And I needed someplace close into town, but sort of big and isolated enough piece of property that, you know, it could be done in a way that it could be seen, but it was not really accessible. And you know, so I got on Google Earth and I looked around and I thought, oh, wait, I've seen this farm off Middlebrook Pike that, you know, that could do just the trick, you know.
Excellent.
So, it, you know, it sort of goes both ways.
All right. So speaking of you doing justice to East Tennessee and doing justice to the University of Tennessee, while we're on the topic of pop culture, the extremely popular movie The Blind Side maybe did a little injustice, in my opinion, to the university, because it's about a guy who ends up going to Ole Miss and they're trying to convince him not to come to UT in one scene. Is there any chance Dr. Brockton will go see that movie in an upcoming book or get the DVD?
Dr. Brockton's been – I went – when this came out, I wanted to go see it, but didn't have time immediately. I went to the bank about 2 months ago and two of the tellers came running up and said, "You're in The Blind Side." And I said, "Oh, I am? What did I do?" And she was telling me that they mentioned the – and I thought it was just a passing comment, but it's not. It's a
whole scene.
It's a 2 or 3 minute section there dealing with bodies. Let me tell you, it's kind of interesting you should ask that. I was looking at some of our previous books and I picked up The Devil's Bones.
Okay.
And you have a great sequence in there that I'm going to see if I can't take out. It starts in one of the egg farms.
And The Devil's Bones is the one that mostly was about bodies being burned and cremation.
That's right.
Okay,
you talked about another sequence in that, but it's where the Allen Home Airport is mentioned and where the plane's taking off and the guy comes out and brings the cars and so forth. And I shouldn't tell you this on the radio, I reckon, but
it's too late now.
I think what we ought to do is to write the football player who is mentioned in the book and send him that section of the book and say, hey, you know, you were afraid to come to UT to play because of bones in the stadium. We now have an opportunity to get those bones out.
Yeah.
How about contributing to the Bass Building, you see?
And yes, all right.
Like, yeah.
Sure, why not? I mean, he's an NFL player for the Baltimore Ravens now.
Yeah.
He's, you know, moved on. And in the movie, I don't think I'll ruin the movie for you, but there's a scene where he is told that the body parts are buried right under the field, right under Shields Watkins Field. I mean, as if you know, he's going to score a touchdown or whatever, and he's going to be walking on sacred grave ground.
Right.
When in reality, where are the bones? Not in the under the field.
Not under the field. No.
No.
They're under the seats where the spectators are sitting. They're on the first and second floor of Neyland Stadium, mainly the south and east. Well, east, south, and west section, yeah. The whole
the whole
south,
stadium.
East and west sections.
All right, so when they say that the attendance at the game is 100 and whatever thousand, shouldn't we add in all those people?
Another several thousand.
You'd have to add in at least another 6,000 or 7,000, yeah, because there are about 5,000 South Dakota skeletons down there, yeah.
Wow, and those are the from your earlier in your career.
From the research I did in the 50s and 60s.
One thing that always amazes me when we talk about the body farm with Dr. Bass and with John Jefferson is how you've noticed the reason you build a collection of modern skeletons is because it's in the course of even in our lifetimes, the American skeleton has changed, has grown.
It changes, yes. You can see it change in 20 years.
20 years?
Uh-huh. You can pick up things. You look at a population 20 years ago and look at it now, you can see there are changes in it.
Well, I use that argument when I tell people, when I'm trying to explain why my son is so much taller than I am. I say, well, Dr. Bass says that.
Okay, well, our skulls are getting taller. They're not getting wider. They're getting taller. The distance from the top of the skull to the bottom of the skull, there are anatomical landmarks that you measure. And you can see this increase in the the length or the increase in the stature of the skull.
The height, call it.
The height of the skull, yes.
Well, John Jefferson, your books have made the body farm even more popular than it already was. And I know it sounds crazy because here in East Tennessee, it's a thing. We all know about it. It's been around forever. They're starting to have body farms in other parts of the country, finally. And there's so many people who are lined up to donate their remains to the body farm that I've been reading about problems about, you know, a backlog. What would you call it? A no room at the farm type situation? I mean, how does
we build that actually a little bit into this book, The Bone Thief, you know, mm-hmm. just running out of space out there because the number of donations has grown so much in the last few years.
Well, what is the turnaround time? I mean, I know you have to rotate crops, but how do you have to? Well, I mean, you can't use the same patch of ground right away again, yeah, can you?
Normally, the turnaround time is about a year. We try not to leave a body out there any longer than a year because the sun will the bone begins to flake away if it's been in the sun for a year, mm-hmm. and so we try to not leave it there that long.
Okay.
There are some from long-term faculty projects. For example, one of the characters in our book is a man named Arpad Vance.
He's real, though.
He's real.
Yeah.
And he lives over in Oak Ridge. But he's the one that is looking at changes from the smell. See if you can find where a body is by looking at the smell that's given off. And there are five bodies buried out at the body farm When they were buried, there were pipes run through the bodies, and they come up out of the ground. And he doesn't need to dig up the bodies. All he does is goes out and takes the edge mm-hmm. off the end off a pipe.
And they've been there for quite some time.
They're going on 5 years right now.
Okay. And Dr. Vass turns up in Bones of Betrayal, the Oak Ridge themed book, and also a little bit in The Bone Thief too, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As I recall. We're running tight on time, but I want to make sure we get a couple other things covered. We're talking about The Bone Thief, the new book by Jefferson Bass, the team. You guys have lots of work to do ahead of you. You're going to be out signing and working the crowds, right?
That's right. We're exercising our book signing muscles right now to get back in shape.
Well, at what point do you have to start writing the next book? And please tell me there's going to be a next book.
Now, yeah. We have two more under contract.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah, so the next one, the manuscript is due at the end of the summer, mm-hmm. and we've talked about ideas, but at this point it's just the idea stage.
But obviously there are some loose ends in this book on purpose, I would hope,
right.
because like I talked about before, I enjoy that continuing storyline. I enjoyed those same characters coming back.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll probably talk in more detail about the next book as we're driving around to book signings. That's traditionally how we do it.
Yeah.
Let me run down a couple of them real quick. The Bone Thief is released to stores on Tuesday, March 23rd, and it starts off that night at Borders, right by Westtown Mall. You'll also be in Nashville and then in Oak Ridge at Books A Million, back in Knoxville at Carpe Librum, down in Chattanooga, then Woodstock, Georgia, Tallahassee, Florida, Atlantic Beach, Florida, Raleigh, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, Johnson City, Tennessee, and Bowling Green, Kentucky, all just so far announced on the Jefferson Bass tour.
Whew, I'm tired.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And to keep updated on that, there's a couple of websites you do want to keep an eye on. One is the official Jefferson Bass website, simply jeffersonbass.com. And I've become a fan of bonezones.com,
okay.
which is operated by the great, are they volunteers who take good care of you when you have a book signing appearance?
That's right.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Susan Seals.
Yes.
But she retired from UT, and she and I had worked together for a number of years, and she was always very helpful with me with books and so forth, and I don't know whether I asked her or she asked me. It was just one of those things that happened. You know?
Yeah, it worked out great.
Yeah,
it worked out great. They organized the line, and I'm hopeful there'll be another slideshow and such lecture at UT before too long that we can all come to see, because I enjoy those as well, like you had at Roan State not too long ago. And I am so sorry that we are already out of time here on the East Tennessee Report. We didn't even get to the FBI sting that happens in the book. I won't give it away, but I'll say that Dr. Brockton has to put his reputation and the university's reputation on the line as he deals with some very shady characters in an effort to bring them to justice.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Bass, thank you again for coming. John Jefferson, we appreciate you being here, of course. You put
Always
it all together.
Delightful.
I couldn't imagine talking to one without the other anymore, you know, the way it all fits together. And again, the book is The Bone Thief. March 23rd is when it comes out. Get yourself a copy. It's fantastic. There's a dead news anchor on page one.
And there's great proofreading by Frank Murphy.
So you were able to use some of my
Absolutely.
My
you caught some good stuff.
Yeah, all right.
You remain eagle-eye frank.
I will not out you on any of those minor typos that I noticed, okay? And I don't know. I can't ask you this on the air. Maybe I'll wait till after we stop recording to find out who – I've got a visual image of this dead news anchor. And I've got – I think I know who she is. I think I know which Knoxville news anchor she looks like. Maybe.
We'll see.
All right. Read the book, and you'll see. The description, I think, is dead on. But
so to speak.
I think, well, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Awesome. Dr. Bass, John Jefferson, thank you again. Great luck, and congratulations on another smash hit.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Frank.
This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.